The Latinos Out Loud Podcast. All right, you guys, it is the time of the show where we interview someone amazing. Not only is he amazing, but he's family. We've known him for years. We've supported his career. So please, one time for Porfirio Peña, music industry ejecutivo. Did I say it right? Ejecutivo. Yes. Could you just... First question, could you explain that? What is an ejecutigre?
El ejecutigre es un tipo ejecutivo en el negocio de la música que tiene más de 20 años y tiene 50 de tigueraje.
Wow. Oh, 50 de tigueraje. That's a double master. That's a double master.
Frank, could you please translate for half of our audience?
I'm going to have to go into my Dominican dictionary right now, the tigueraje to really go in on that. Wow, that's amazing, Popi.
What would you say is the English word for tigueraje?
Hustler?
Okay.
Executive
hustler?
Hi, Popi. It's so good to see you on Zoom. You're out there in DR right now. You've been in the music biz for how many years now?
30 years.
Wow.
30 years. So wow. If you had to encapsulate it, if you had to summarize what you do in layman's terms, could you explain to our audience what it is that you do for a living?
I've been guiding artists from point A to point C, make them a lot of money, and hopefully make them understand that they need to save money so they can stay put when they get old.
And that's really important, right? Because, I mean, what about the artist's life happens that, like, they need somebody like you?
Managers and executive in the music industry, I navigated, both. It's babysitting adults. And sometimes you can take the horse to the river to drink water, but you cannot make them drink the water.
And you specialize within certain genres of music, or do you deal with any and every genre?
Latin business. I have done, I think, everything in the Latin business, all the subgenres in the Latin business, from pop to tropical, a little bit of the original Mexican. I used to wear my boots and my cowboy hat.
Vale, pues.
Oh, damn.
Right?
Dale, güey.
Yo, you guys, I met Popi. I don't really know what year. It's not very clear, but when you were at BMI, right? And we did a lot of work together. I think when I was at People in Español, maybe even MTV3 back in the day. But it was always a pleasure working with you. And I always learned from you because, I'm not in the music biz. I was on the marketing side of an entertainment magazine that covers the artists and musicians. But I always thought it was fascinating just how you're out there promoviendo, like moving the artists forward, moving Latinos forward, which is what we do on the podcast. So what was it that made you even pursue this career?
Actually, I always had a love for music since I can remember. I mean, growing up in a little town in the Dominican Republic, San Francisco de Macorís, Serie 56, I used to listen to a lot of baladas and boleros, and, I used to collect albums, vinyls back in the days, and 8-track tapes. It's not the cassette.
Oh, damn, you went back to A-tracks. Wow. A-track,
yeah.
Frank still listens to them in his car.
So yeah.
Exactly. Car used to come with A-track. And then cassette.
I use them as coasters.
Yes.
Collector's items.
Oh, my mom used to use them to throw them on my head.
Coño, pata tranquilo.
Fernando Villalona, really? Come on.
Ese no.
Eight is enough, please.
Oh, God. 8-track is enough? Jamie, come on. So please continue. We're sorry. We're rude.
Yes. And I moved to New York in 1978.
Mm.
I'm 55. So at that time, I was born in 65. How old was I? I was like 8. And I only lasted like, what, until junior high? I was smoking weed. My mom found out. And she sent me back to DR.
Antes de que yo mate a este muchacho, lo voy a meter en el colegio evangélico ahí en Bonao.
So then you went back, and then what happened? I like this, like, life of Popey that we're listening to right now. This life is of great. Popey.
And they never sent me to Colegio Evangelico because I promised my mom, you put me there, and I'm going to escape. So it's going to be, a hassle for you because every time I go there, I'm going to go back out. So they sent me back to San Francisco, and I did, I finished 2 years in high school in San Vicente de Paul on my third year of high school, which is what? That's the sophomore year
junior,
right. And then senior. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So junior year in San Francisco de Macorís, I como 8 colegios. Y de todito me votaron. Así que imagina.
Oh, wow. ¿Cómo? You were a troublemaker like that?
San Vicente de Paul, La Altagracia, La Milagrosa, San Miguel, Centro Educativo Neno Olivier.
Wow. No, but why? What were you doing?
I was a good kid, you know? I was setting fires in the classroom, stinking bombs.
In all your yearbooks, you were like most likely to get expelled.
Yes.
Wow. And then what happened?
And then I moved to Santo Domingo, to the capital. And I finished my last year in OEM High School, which is the high school and the university of the president of the Dominican Republic and his family right now. And my first year of college was there. And then I went back to the States. Mm.
And you still had this love of music? Like, did you ever want to actually be a performer? Or
I was an autophile. So I used to listen to high fidelity music.
Oh.
And I used to have high fidelity, like Macintosh amplifiers, monophonics, put into stereos. I had Adcom preamp, very high-end speakers. I had soda turntables. For those who doesn't know, like the 1200s, which is the turntable for DJs.
Yeah.
Like the best turntable. And then you had the Pioneer mixer. The soda tables are like the high-end to listen to high audio definition music. You can have a jackhammer next to it and it doesn't bounce. Wow. It's vacuum propel. So I used to work and spend all my money buying music. I used to have a collection of probably 3,500 albums.
Damn.
If you worked at Best Buy, you would probably make me buy like $600 headphones. Because the way you're talking about it right now, this right here, if you put a jackhammer, you won't hear it.
Yeah, he's good.
This has all the equipment you need. And it's like, I'm going to buy all that.
And then Nelson, so collecting music and listening to music, it wasn't until like the 1980s that I started listening to Latin music, where I was a rockhead. To me, it was, Jethro Tull, it was like way out music. When I had hair, now I have.
Give us some more. Wait, name drop some more bands that you were listening to before Latin music.
Metallica.
Ooh. You had the hair. You had the long hair too.
Yeah, I had the long.
No fucking way. Somewhere.
Yeah, hair up to here.
Well, be taking it back to 1200s and taking it back to the days. Me and Pills were going back and forth. And we were talking about your career in general. And I was telling him that I consider you like one of the forefathers of merengue, hip hop, like even Spanish trap. Like you're really like one of the forefathers of that genre of music with Sandy Papo, Proyecto Uno. Tell us about it. Like, how did that come into your mind? How did those two genres, like, come into your in your creation of your mind? Like, what were you thinking about back then?
So transitioning in New York, I noticed that there were a lot of Dominicans looking nice, you know, nice tetas and culo and shit. And I didn't know how to dance merengue. And I didn't like merengue. So I started listening to merengue and going to merengue parties. And Nelson from Proyecto Uno was playing with a couple of local bands, Los Mieses. He was at Seward Park High School and going into LaGuardia Community College at that time. And I started like DJing around, you know, so I bought myself 1200s and I used to do the party at 135th. And then I play a couple of times in Fuego Fuego and I play in Estudio 84.
Oh man, that's Washington Heights back in the days.
Yeah, with the crates. And actually the idea of hip hop and merengue and dance music, it was Nelson Zapata, who is the lead and owner of Proyecto Uno, and Pavel de Jesus. And we are three childhood friends from the Dominican Republic. And it happens that Nelson is, we're sort of related. He's the brother of my sisters. So it was his father who passed away, got, you know, rest his soul, was my mom's first husband. So they had two girls, they divorced, then he married another woman and he had Nelson, Rafaelito, and Francis. And my mom married another man and had me. But you know how Dominicans are. We we grew up like brothers. You know, he spent summers in San Francisco. I spent summers in Santo Domingo in his house. So, you know, we had the same sister. So that's how we knew. And Pavel and him grew up together here in Santo Domingo. So back in the night, you know, we used to see each other back. So back in 1989, they showed me a remake of Black Box, Everybody, Everybody.
Everybody, everybody.
Everybody, oh, everybody. Okay, stop.
Yeah, that's it. You
that
got
was my
it.
Jam, yo. Everybody. All right. Yep. So, yeah.
And they showed it to me and I said, wow, you know, this is different, you know, mixing merengue and dance music. But I think you need a rapper in there, you know? Mm. And Pavel said, oh shit, that's a good idea. I have a friend who has a cousin who is a rapper. The friend happens to be Ray Rock, a producer too in dance music, who happens to be Magic Swan's cousin. And we brought in Magic Juan as a guest artist. And that's the first 12 LP or EP, you know, with various mixes of Proyecto Uno. We put it out in our own label, PNP, Pavel, Nelson, and Popi, or Popi, Nelson, and Pavel, you know, whichever. And for 2 years, we were knocking on everybody's door. We were going club after club with the vinyl under our arms. You know, it's like we didn't know anybody. Pavel knew a few people because he was working at Quad Recording Studio. So he was working with Def Jam a lot, which was Dave Morales, Satoshi Tomei, Frankie Knuckles, you know, the big guys of dance music at that time and all the remixes. So he was assistant engineering and then he was engineering and then he was co-producing with them, you know, a lot of the big remixes. A lot of people don't know that Pavel did Michael Jackson in the Closet remix with Frankie, you know, with Frankie Knuckles and Dave Morales. So,
wow.
Yeah. I mean, Color Me Bad. Pavel has worked in a lot of big records that a lot.
Well, he did My Amor, I Adore Me More.
That's from Color Me Bad.
Yeah. Well, I Want to Sex You Up, which is still my jam.
Well, I Adore Me More because it had a little Latin influence. You know what I mean?
Like, okay.
He
did. He worked on the remixes. So back in the early 90s, they used to do a lot of remixes. You know, that I don't know if they still do, but that's the way they used to break records. DJs was a very, very important part in breaking, you know, Anglo music.
Yay, DJ.
Yeah.
Hell Miles, you should totally add color to that. Like, is that still the case, or is there a different rollout of music?
Oh, of course. I mean, it's still the DJs are the pulse of the music industry, you know. But because of the whole digital movement, a lot of younger generations forget, you know, that how important the DJs are. You know what I mean? And everybody thinks it's just streaming and this and that, but the DJs are still much alive and still very important for the music industry. So, and Poppy, you know, explaining how where he comes from, and I can tell you from my experience that DJs are super important to the whole entertainment industry. Go ahead, Ale. What were you gonna say?
Well, I was just going to say, Poppy, like, I just have vivid memories of telling my Sweet 16 DJ, I need you to play the song. No pare, sigue, sigue, no pare, sigue, sigue. And I just, like, put it on my list. Like, it was the motherfucking jam, son. Like, during that era, y'all remember Proyecto Uno, Uno, Uno. Like, I don't know how. So, okay. So take us back, because I love this story. So you got the rapper, you put things in place, and then how did Proyecto Uno become Proyecto Uno?
So 2 years knocking doors, like I said, you know, drinking 40s, going into the club because we had no money. Everybody was working. true story, Nelson was working at Pfizer Pharmaceutical, and he was the one who deposited the formula at FDA in Washington for Viagra.
What?
Wait, whoa.
Whoa.
You know a Dominican came up with that. A sex pill? Of course a Dominican came up with that.
That's where I play Nobody Sigue Sigue when I play some Viagra.
Pfizer scientist came up with that, but he was the one responsible for filing the patent at the FDA and whatever they need to do to get Viagra out. I remember that very clearly.
There must have been a lot of free samples. So that's what's up.
You were like, wait, what does that pill do?
It makes pill? You go wrong.
Mr. Pills?
Pills. Pills. What is that?
And I remember, like, in 1991, 2 years later, WKDM 1380, Raul Lopez Bastida was the general manager, programmer. Music program director, and La Muñequita play Everybody. And it was a Wednesday around 12 noon. It was crazy, you know. And from there, started taking off. Then we recorded Brinca. We recorded another cover song. We did Money Talks. And we did also Delight Grooves in the Heart.
Wow.
Wait, yeah. Money Talks is Money Talks. Money Talks.
Money Talks. 30 cats, I want to. 30
I know all those songs.
Yeah.
That's dope.
We called it Tan Interesada, Money Talks. Tan Interesada, buena para nada. Whoa, Money Talks.
Oye, pero Papi tiene flow. Papi tiene flow. Wow. So then,
go ahead.
No, please continue.
And we did Brinca. And Brinca, it was the first actually merengue hip hop. It was just Magic One rapping to a merengue and hip hop beat. And that shit exploded.
You know?
All of a sudden, like Spain wants us there, Ecuador wants us there, Venezuela wants us there, you know. It was like, what the heck is going on? You know, so I had quit my job back in 1990, mid-1990s. And I used to go and help JNN, who was a distributor. They signed us, they gave us a fucked up contract. But hey, that's how you learn in the music business, you know. And with Brinca, and those other three songs, we've completed an album, and it was Ricky Nelson, and Magic One was just a guest artist. That's the first album. And on the second album, which is Proyecto Uno is in the House, we put in two Puerto Ricans and two Dominicans, and that's where we did El Tiburón after, 2 years touring and going around. You know, we play in New York. Our first show in New York was at Roseland.
I remember that place.
Yep. So when we used to play at Palladium, we used to play, you know, we never play a lot in Uptown. They didn't want to pay money. It's like, promoción, tienen que hacerlo y vaina. So.
Wait, so at that point in music history, like nobody was really mixing the genre, like the, like rap and merengue. Nobody was really even attempting it. Like this, in music history, you guys were really the pioneers of something like that, starting that?
I said the fusion of it, it was us, but it was already, Vico C already with Josie Esteban had Blanca, which was a big song. Also, Eddie Herrera with Wilfrido Vargas en El Jardinero. And also, in here in the Dominican Republic, what a lot of the musicologists considered like the first Latin rap song, they remake Freddy Veras Goico, which is a comedian who passed away, and Boruga. Yes. They remake Rapper's Delight from Sugar Hill Gang.
Yes.
Mire, joven, ya no vale que me lave bañada con su madre que ya le gusta bailar. La aseguro que mejor me mato si algún día este cato se la quiere manusia. Y a truja. Y soa. Well, I think they made that as soon as the Rapper's Delight came out, which was in 1979, when Sugar Hill dropped that.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. So way, talking about 11 years before, and El Africano was like probably 6 years before in the 1980s. And Blanca with Vico C was also, I think, 1989, around there. Yeah, so, but it was Proyecto Uno, and El General was doing lo que converted into reggaeton today.
Yes.
You know, and Nando Boone also was doing it too, which is another Panamanian. And then from Vico C, two girls came out, Francesca and Lisa M. That was like 1991 came out. So, and Francesca and Lisa M come from Vico C. And then Francesca was dancing with Lisa M and came out for that. We had a song that, I forgot the labels. Prime Records was the label in Puerto Rico who was pushing urban music. And they had signed, I think, DJ Nelson at that time, you know. And this was happening too with the DJs and the Playeros. You know, they were doing the reggaeton in like in the 1995s around there.
En general.
Una pregunta, Poppy, para la gente que tú sabes que no conoce mucho de tu trayectoria. Your travels, I'm going to Spanglish, all your travels, can you tell like one of the most memorable stories when you went out with Proyecto Uno or with Sandy Papo or with Ilegales? What's one of the most, give me one of those stories that people are going to get a kick out of, you know, what you went through when you were managing.
Oh, you want a funny one? I can tell you two. One is the first show that we did in Ecuador, in Guayaquil, Terminal Terrestre, 150,000 people. Unfucking believable. Wow, you know, wow. Like, the motorcade, like president, four motorcycles, 20 trucks, and then us, you know.
Wait, were they practicing social distancing?
Not at that time. We were practicing social closeness.
Anti-distancing.
But I remember once going to Spain and coming back from Spain. It was Magic Juan, Francis Mendez, Nelson, and Ricky. And we were coming back in Iberia, coach. And it was me at the window, Francis in the middle, Magic on the seat, you know, the aisle seat. And then there were, you know, Spaniard people in the front and the back. And then the other two guys were further down. And I farted.
Oh, shit.
And it was stinking as hell.
Oh, my God. Wow.
And the guy in front of me turns back, look at Francis, look at me, and look at Magic Juan. And he goes, parece que al negro la patata le han caído mal.
Can you translate for us, please?
Jamie, can you translate?
Hey, he said it too fast.
Parece que al negro las patatas le han caído mal.
He's basically saying el moreno, the black dude.
It looks like the black dude.
Oh, because like Spaniards on the plane.
I got that one.
Man.
That's funny.
Racism at its best.
Oh, man. That's crazy. You have a lot of stories, though. You have a lot of stories.
Hilarious. A good fart story. You can never beat a good fart story.
How much money was, what was the price that you were getting back in the days?
For Proyecto Uno, we had two type of shows. We had a track show, which was a dancer, DJ, and the guys. We were charging $7,500 a show. Mm. And for club show, if we for bigger venues, $10,000, and then with the band, it was $15,000 and traveling like 17 people.
Did you ever go to like one of those, you know, let's call them illegal, you know, what do you want to, give me a good word for it.
A brothel? No,
I can tell you illegal in Colombia. I got a good one.
It's a thin line.
I want to make sure I'm politically correct on how.
You mean drug dealers?
Yeah, can you please specify the illegal
pharmaceuticals, you know, where you would buy Viagra.
Exactly.
Bobby, talking about drug dealing, being from the Heights and being from Washington Heights, I want to ask you a particular rapper that we follow up in the Heights, Messiah. I saw that you did a podcast and you guys, you know, had a back and forth. Talk to me about Messiah and your situation right now.
Well, Messiah is a kid that I signed when I was at BMI as Talia Messiah. Amazing, amazing talent. And then he was working with someone. Then he started working with Jimmy. And in 2016, Jimmy calls me and said, bro,
Who's Jimmy?
Jimmy used to work at... Wu-Tang Latino.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, Wu-Tang Latino. And then he did his own label called Joe Jai's. And he was working with Tali and Messiah separately, you know, both as an artist.
Okay.
And Messiah was starting to take off. He always used to call me, ask me for advice. The year prior to that, I had put Messiah to open up at one of the biggest festivals in San Jose, Costa Rica. I helped him get a promoter to promote his son in Panama. I guide him to get him to be in Colombia because the resurgence at that time was coming from Colombia in reggaeton in 2015. And in 2016, I started working with him. And it was great. It was a great run for 10 months. And
you took him out to Europe. I remember you took him out to Europe.
I took him to Europe for a month. We did 15 sold out shows.
I remember.
When we came back, we left getting paid $8,000 in the United States. I came back charging double that, $1,750, $16,000. And we were all sold out. I got him with Canessa, he used to be our publicist, to be the face of Sean John on the Lion Market.
Wow.
He was also the voice of Gatorade. Wow. And the plan was always to sell him and be the face of Latino, but in mainstream America. You know, handsome guy who can sing, who can rap, who can write amazing, you know. But he's tripolar. Not bi.
Bipolar?
Yeah.
Three personalities?
Some shit like that.
Oh my God.
I'm not a doctor, but.
¿Y qué pasó? So he owed you money? Or like, how did it, where did it take a turn?
when you build and they destroy, when you build and then destroy, you start losing credibility. You know, Pels can tell you, we went to a meeting that through our mutual friend who has taken two artists to that label. One was Daddy Yankee and the second was Messia. And I mean, I'm talking a very high level executive in the music industry. Two artists has taken to Republic Records. One was Daddy Yankee and the other one was Messia. So you can imagine how he thought about Messia. And we had a meeting for 15 minutes and they canceled every other fucking meeting to give us 2 hours.
Wow. Wow.
That's Republic. And coming down, we were going to do a meeting with Def Jam, but not that day. We found the VP of marketing and we found another friend who was Dominican who I was talking to get him over there. And we ended up doing the meeting. We went to eat with the vice president of Def Jam. And then I took him to Atlantic and, you know, it was like that. He was going to get a deal with BMG on a publishing without having a song on the charts. It was unheard of. I'm talking about a multi-million dollar deal, you know, offer from Warner Music. You know, it was like, I don't know if it all got to his head. I don't know. I don't know what happened, you know. But it took a run turn around November. I got him a deal with Sync Music. I put his catalog in order, what he had. He had signed his publishing. I was discovering all this as it was going along to a Colombian friend of mine that I didn't even know, someone that I knew that I helped get his publishing straight in the USA through ASCAP and BMI. And I called him Dr. Velasquez, and I said, dude, you have Messia signed. Like, and how can I release him? You know, it's like, this is Porfirio Pena. He used to work at BMI. Pope, yeah. Dr. Velasquez, bro, you help me do this. Like, send the release. I'll give it to you for free. No one gives nothing for free in the music industry. You know, so that will allow me to get a better deal for him in publishing. We went to Pulse in LA to write with like some of the biggest producer at that time who were working with Lady Gaga and we were working, you know, it's like, so there was honest interest from being, I think Messia was going to be the next big pun.
I agree with you.
Latino coming out of New York, you know, I'm breaking barriers. And we were pushing that, you know, we were doing the Hot 97s, we were doing the BLS, we were doing, you know, those type of interviews and those type of media, you know, through Canessa, who's an amazing publicist. I think it's one of the few or the only one Latina who can understand and navigate both markets. You know, she's doing Calle 13 right now. She's doing Maluma. She's responsible for Maluma meeting Madonna. That's how good she fucking is. Mm-hmm. So imagine. So he owed me some money and he didn't want to pay. And I didn't want to deal with all the bullshit that was going on. You know, he got problems with someone from the Bronx. And you know, and there were some shootings in Miami and there were some shootings in New York. And I said, I'm too fucking old for this shit. I'm a manager. I don't need to be at every show. He got pissed. You know, it's like managers don't go to every show. You know, you got road managers for that, you know. And he didn't want to pay me it was like $12,500. And I said, okay,
fine. Because that's it?
Fine, you know, fine, it's okay. I don't need it, thank God. And I let it roll. So 2017 came, and he was still doing show, and he signed his deal with Atlantic through a third party, not directly, you know. And I counted all the show he did. And he got in 2018 a little Three Kings Day present. The lawsuit.
Oh, toma. Got the papers.
Toma, coge ahí.
Popi, yeah. you deal with so many artists. A question, what's a mistake that you see that many artists make? Like, with all the experience that you've had all these years, what would you tell artists coming up? What's the major mistake that most artists make?
I will say Latino artists in general, and I would say Dominican artists. And, you know, just because you're a friend of Pels doesn't mean that you don't need a public relation person. Doesn't mean that you don't need a DJ marketing guy. Doesn't mean that you don't need a radio guy just because you're a friend with Arturito Sosa. The label works because there's a structure. You know, Justin Bieber works because there's a structure. There's a company behind it, you know, that does all the things that needs to be done. Doesn't mean that you cannot be friends with Pills, but structure means structure. And that's why it works. That's why they become multimillionaires, you know, because there's a structure in it. La Dominicanos don't like that shit.
And so now fast forward, you're still in the biz and you're working with artists like Prince Royce, Don Omar, Joel and Randy, Plan B. I also am a fan of Plan B. Juan Magan, oh. Wisin Yandel. So what's the like new age now in music? You know, I'm sure like there are new ways with technology and social media. How have you adapted and what are some of those new ways of music nowadays?
Well, music changed. You know, there was a shift from CD going down, you know, MP3s or digital music coming up. It took 10 years for the curve to go up. Now you got all these digital platforms out there, the Spotify of the world, the Amazon Music, the Tidal, the Deezer, the Apple Music, the YouTube Music. You know, don't get it confused. You got YouTube, the audiovisual, and then you got YouTube Music, which is the music channel. You know, a lot of people don't know. It's like, oh, well, why is this happening? You know, it's like, why the YouTube comes out and I only have 20,000 followers and I have a million here. Well, one is YouTube Music, one is the YouTube video, you know, thing. I think it's easier because of distribution. You have all these third-party aggregators, which they call, which are the TuneCores of the world, which are the DistroKids of the world, that put your music in all the platform. And they think that just because of that, you're gonna have a hit. I tell you, no. Unfortunately, you need to work double because you still need to work radio and you still need to work the music TV channels and you still need to work all the digital platforms. So it's more work. I think what the digital world gives you, if you put out 1, 2, 3 songs, you know, one every week, and then you say, okay, let me see which one is running, you can see numbers faster than before, that there was no transparency in the music industry through the music labels. So you can see now, where is it being played? Who's consuming it? You know, what is demographic? And then you can say, okay, out of the 3 songs, I'm gonna push number 2. And then you can go all out and put money behind it. You know, Pills can do a favor for me, but his knowledge and his contacts, you know, cost money and people don't get that. You know, you can get one favor in this industry. The rest you need to pay. You know, he has built it, you know, Pills, when he was starting doing Latin Mix in 2005, a lot of people didn't believe in him.
By the way, sidebar. I have to say this. I have to say this because you just put it right there. I have to tell you that when I started this crazy madness about Latin Mix, it was such a tough, time to be able to get money from sponsorships. And somebody had told me, yo, you got to meet Popi. You got to meet Popi. I'm like, who the heck is Popi? Oh, it's a tipo, he knows everybody. I was like, all right, set me up a meeting. Yo, and I was like, I gotta go meet this guy. I go meet him. I start talking about my vision And I tell him what it is, and I swear to God, he said, I got $500 for you. I was like, yo, to me, I mean, I had like maybe like $3,000 in my pocket, but it was 500 sponsorship. It was like, yo, I was like, I started crying and shit. I was like, oh my God, someone believes in my vision. That I think is the reason. And I'm an old school person. I believe in, like, when you meet somebody that sees your vision truly, like so I ride or die with Poppy to the death. So I don't care what anybody says, good, bad, or ugly. I ride with Poppy to the end because he believed in me from day one. So my bad, Poppy. You know, you just brought that in, so I have to, like, you know.
No. Same thing with Rachel when she was at People in Español. You know, it's like I was doing the artists, the songwriters that were artists, a favor. And it was something that I needed. I didn't have to do it, but I believe in Latinos. I believe in the cause. I believe in pushing us forward. You know, it's like, oh, what are you doing? You know, it's like People in Español Fiesta, People in Español whatever. You know, and I was pitching. And how can we get involved? How can be in my help? You know, it's like, I help, but you got to help, you know, the others.
I just remembered who we booked through you and how I met you. Taxi Amarillo. Do you remember that?
Yes.
It was the fiesta in Central Park that I was producing. It was like my baby, because I was put on the executive committee to formulate this event for Latinos in New York City. And we landed at Central Park Summer Stage. And then I was introduced to you by Claudia, who worked with the LAMC conference.
And then,
te lo juro, you guys, like, every time I called Poppy, he always, like, came through, you know, whether it was an artist thing or a link to a sponsor. Like, there was always this, like, reciprocating, you know, like, you know, you do favors for one another and then you try to evolve each other's business. So, I mean, it was always such a pleasure to work with you and to see, like, what you're doing now, Poppy. I'm a very, very proud sobrina tuya. But my next question is, like, so what is ahead for you? What are you working on right now? Get us excited. Let us know. We want to support.
Yeah.
Well, trying to grow hair.
Hey, pills. Do you want to cover that one? Because.
Lo moño, tan así.
Of all of us.
It's called $5,000.
Oh, no, nigga. Nah. I'd rather be bald.
Look at that. Huh? Wow.
So, you know, 8 years at BMI. In 2012, I quit. It was a great run at BMI. So coming back from Mesilla, you know, to BMI to cover all of those artists that you said that I signed and pushed forward and helped push forward. And now I have a company called La Oreja Media Group, which is a digital distribution platform. We have most of the artists coming out of the Dominican Republic on the tropical and pop genre. I have an artist that I signed. Her name is Techi Fatule, amazing singer-songwriter, graduated from Berklee School of Music. She was just named this year one of the 50 most beautiful people at People in Español.
Oh, wow. Damn.
Zacarías Ferreira, to me, like, bachata at its best. Working with us almost 3 years. And in one album, platinum album, three multi-platinum singles, Ilegales, a group that I started back in the 90s, also working with us. Manny Cruz, which is a new merenguero, which we don't have a lot of them. We only have two. One is called Gabriel, and then Manny Cruz. He's nominated. He has two nominations for Latin Grammy this year. And Pavel Nunez, which is a singer-songwriter, also has a nomination Latin Grammy this year. Incredible enough, not as a singer-songwriter, but as best tropical song He wrote a merengue, which is amazing, Y Basta Ya, and he's nominated on the Latin Grammy, and working with Milly Quesada, La Reina del Merengue.
Wow.
You know, and working with Miriam Cruz, which is, I think, La Princesa del Merengue, you know, who is an artist who plays a lot, you know, Peña Suazo. His song, Mi Mujer Me Gobierna, went viral on TikTok. It has more than 250 million, you know, streams, incredibles, and like 1.4 million videos done, you know.
How do you feel about that, like, real quick, about how kind of the social media has taken over music? That's probably like a deep, longer question, but like a quick answer. Is this something that you look for now in artists? They need to have that social media presence when back in the day that wasn't even a thing?
Mm. They do, because it's a way to communicate with your fan. If you know how to use it properly, Jamie,
yeah,
it's a way to communicate with your fans and get the news to them faster.
Yeah,
you know. Okay. But it's a combination of both. I think people want to be in your life. They want to know what you do on a daily basis. So it's a lot of responsibility too, because if you don't give them what they want, they're going to go to the next artist right away, you know? And just because you have millions of followers doesn't mean that you're engaging properly with them. A lot of people don't know that. Just because you have a lot of subscribers or a lot of followers doesn't mean that you're engaging properly with them. Doesn't mean that I'm going to pay you as an influencer, because you're not influencing crap, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's how many times is that magazine actually passed over and they're reading it, you know?
Yo, let me ask you a question, speaking along these lines before we wrap. So, like, as a consumer, what is the best way to support an artist now? Like, we're not going to live events, so we can't buy concert tickets. Are people still urged to buy music off of Apple? Like, how can we best support our own Latino artists?
You don't buy music. You subscribe. The norm now is subscription-based. Is subscribing to Apple Music, is consuming their music, their videos, you know, in one of the platforms, you know. It's the way. I mean, it's sad that I don't like this virtual concerts. The energy doesn't flow properly. You know, I think the artist, I'm not an artist, but being backstage, I know when I get goosebumps, when I hear people scream, you know, and they're shouting and they're jumping, you know, when the DJ is playing it in the club, yeah, and that song comes on, you know, it's like that energy.
There's nothing like that.
Yeah, I need that, you know. And I'm an executive, I'm not even an artist. Imagine an artist who feeds off the energy of the consumer, you know. So to me, it's hard. To me, I hope that they can find the cure. To me, I hope that we can, you know, instead of social distancing, it will be social closeness again, you know, so music can go forward.
Well, we're gonna keep supporting you and all of your artists. Please, one time for Porfirio Piña, Ejecutigere, La Oreja. Yes.
Thank you, brother.
Time.
Thank you, guys.
Much.